Second case is United States v. Christensen. Appellant ready?
Yes, sir.
Is the government ready? Now, that I have the right government counsel, would you prefer to speak to the court seated or I leave it up to you? Thank you. Okay. Very well. Appellant may argue.
Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, may it please the court, I'm Captain Cody Cheek, and along with my co-counsel, Major Christopher Coleman, we represent the appellant, Christopher Christensen. Chief Judge Stuckey, may I please reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal?
You may.
The government took appellant's ID card, gave him a DD-214, told him he was out of the Army, and then tried to keep its options open by secretly delaying his pay processing, even though he was not actually due any pay. Under the facts of this case, there are at least two separate reasons why this honorable...
Well, leaving aside the merit of the argument, was it a secret?
Christopher Christensen and his family...
It was a secret to your client.
Yes, Your Honor, I didn't... I'm not trying to be euphemistic.
No, go ahead. But that may cast it in... That may give it more weight than it deserves. But go ahead.
Yes, Your Honor. Based on these facts are at least two separate reasons why this honorable court should find a lack of personal jurisdiction. First, based on appellant's debt, this case satisfies the plain language of 10 U.S.C. Section 1168 Alpha, as his non-existent final pay was ready for delivery in April 2013. Alternatively, if the plain language of the statute was not met, its guidance should not be applied in cases where soldiers will never receive any final pay. Second, despite this court's false alarm footnote in Hart, the government intentionally delayed the processing of appellant's pay for over 7 months without telling appellant or his family.
The appellant nor his family was told, so why did you seem to be backing away from this concept that it was secret? Wasn't it secret to the appellant here?
Your Honor, absolutely was. I guess I wasn't sure if I understood the Chief Judge's question, and it absolutely unequivocally, it absolutely was secret.
He was surprised.
He was at a civilian rehabilitation facility when armed military police officers showed up and told him that he had to go with them back to Fort Stewart, which was the first direct contact he'd had with his unit over 8 months, and during an interim time in which he'd been receiving letters from the VA. So it absolutely was, I mean, not to mention he was paying for his own care, paying for his own treatment. To the extent that I was potentially seeming to walk back, I certainly didn't mean to. It was absolutely unquestionably a secret in this case.
Okay. What is the significance of 1168? Is it a jurisdictional statute?
Your Honor, I think it's not, but this court has looked to it for guidance. And the way I'd summarize it, Your Honor, is while Hart reiterated that this court looked to 1168 for guidance, Nettles firmly and explicitly clarified when that guidance is inapt, when it goes against reason or policy. And we think that subsequent clarification, if you will, in Nettles, I mean, it was always guidance. But I'm not aware of any case in which this court had explained when the parameters of the guidance are explicitly as inapplicable as it did in Nettles.
So are you applying a totality of the circumstances argument here?
No, Your Honor.
Then what is the part of what Nettles talks about is the need for certainty. When you've got those three factors, you have certainty. If there is some wavering, if we start looking at reason and policy, aren't we inserting uncertainty into this process?
Your Honor, our position is that Hart is distinguishable from this case, but 1168 Alpha, we would argue, does not have anything to do with jurisdiction. And we would argue that Hart does represent an unworkable framework, specifically based off of the uncertainty. This very term, this court in blanks, talked about the application of stare decisis, which is one of the fundamental tenets. I mean, every first-year law student in the country knows the importance of stare decisis. And this court in blanks talked about the factors that are...
Okay, but if we're not using totality of circumstances, what is the standard. How are we deciding? In Nettles, we were talking about the issuance of the DD Form 214. Here we're addressing the issue of the final pay and accounting. Where do we get certainty here?
Your Honor, certainty would come from finding that Hart is unworkable.
But what's the substitute? Nettles?
Your Honor, I think that the substance would be the blanks analysis. And I'm not trying to get too far off track. Our baseline argument is to the extent you look at the statute, its language is met. If not, the debt and the delay satisfy the logic of Nettles. But there is a strong, compelling argument that those four factors, whether it's unworkable or poorly reasoned, intervening events, reasonable expectations of service members, and the risk of undermining confidence in the law, does support a clarification or absolute overturning of Hart.
Now, well, I understand. I don't want to belabor the point. I mean, I certainly understand the stare decisis argument, but what I'm saying is, what would you have this court substitute? Let's say, for the sake of argument, that Hart and so forth said, and I recognize that they talk about guidance and guiding principles and so forth, but let's say, for the sake of argument, that they rigidly applied, you have to have these three things: DD Form 214 clearance and final pay and accounting. You're rejecting this idea of totality of the circumstances. I'm asking you, what is the principle you would have this court articulate, in our opinion, that would provide certainty to Chiefs of Justice and anyone else in the JAG Corps about when a service member is no longer subject to in personam jurisdiction?
Your Honor, I would point squarely to the dissenting part and the language and logic of that dissenting opinion. Hart was a very narrowly tailored, sharply divided decision that again, we argue was cabined by Nettles in regards to how far it can extend. What we believe the government's done in this case is try to weaponize the false alarm footnote in Hart. And we don't think Hart in any way, shape, or form stands what the government says it stands for. However, and that's why, and I really am trying to squarely answer your question, but this is difficult. This case and the way the framework applies is very hard, and I think it's
I think I'm like Judge Olson. Why would you resist the totality approach? In other words, if we're talking about, even if the criteria of Hart are not met, that if it's beyond reason or beyond policy, don't you, by definition, have to consider other facts and circumstances? I mean, isn't it easier to argue that your case fits into that box instead of throwing away Hart and the kit and caboodle at the same time?
Your Honor, I think the dissent in Hart talks about, in the majority, he said they
Well, but isn't it's a hard, it's an uphill battle to, having been in the dissent, I mean, it's an uphill battle to get people to change their minds about it, and especially the dissent was the dissent for a reason, was it not?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And again, I guess our baseline point is that Hart need not necessarily be overturned to find a lack of jurisdiction. But I certainly don't want to give short shrift to the clear uncertainty and the importance of service members having reasonable expectations and being able to rely on the promises of the Army's own regulations, the promises of employees, the promises of the different personnel interacting with service members and their family.
Well, you don't have to do that here, do you? I mean, it looks like everybody, including the accused himself, thought he was out of the service, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
There was no pay to be given. So that part of Hart doesn't apply.
Your Honor, absolutely. And that is our first baseline argument, is that the plain language of 1168 Alpha is met. To the extent this court looks to 1168, it's satisfied.
Why isn't that a common sense reading of Hart as opposed to a hyper-technical reading of Hart, or facts and circumstances, which is, I think, what Judge Olson recommended to you to start?
Your Honor, this court need go no further than the plain language of 1168 Alpha. Like, the plain language of the statute is satisfied in this case because there was no final pay. And in Hart, one of the things that was grappled with was, if he took his projection separation settlement and took it, you know, would they give him any you know, his final pay or essential part? Would they satisfy the statutory criteria? The answer was no. In this case, the answer is yes. There's nothing to deliver.
Doesn't it seem a little anomalous that, to take your approach, if someone who is owed pay, Uncle Sam is saying, we can still put the habeas gravis on you. But if you owe the government money, if you're in debt to the government, then you're out of the Army. Wouldn't it seem to make more sense that the opposite was true?
Your Honor, we believe that's what the plain language compels. The plain language of the statute places conditions on the and that condition is met in a case where there is no final pay due. A statute designed to ensure that a soldier's final pay is ready for delivery should not function as the sole basis for continuing jurisdiction when a soldier who's received all the pay he's ever going to get has cleared the installation, surrendered his ID card, and received his jurisdiction. And we think that's buttressed by the plain language of 1168 itself.
What about the question of authority here? It seems like the machinery of the Army was clanking its way, as it clanks, toward this guy's administrative discharge. And it was, you know, he was being thrown out administratively for failing alcohol rehabilitation, which is certainly a reason in the regulation. And then no commander, no one seemingly with any authority, someone who was the chief of justice said, whoa, we might, you know, hold off on this. Don't process this thing that everybody else, including the command, agreed to, because maybe we still want to court-martial this guy.
Your Honor, the machinery of the Army separated appellant from the top of the Army system. The TAPD of the exact acronym, Ms. Wright sends an email. He is separated from the top of the system.
Well, I don't know what TAP is.
It's the top of the system, as she explained.
What, you mean the Secretary of the Army? Sure, the Secretary of the Army didn't have to sign off on every enlisted person's discharge.
I'm just talking about a personnel system.
Okay.
But the bottom line is this was a command executed, or command initiated, executed, and we argue completed discharge, which is further buttressed by all the actions and undertakings of the personnel in this case, with the exception of the ultra vires actions of the Chief of Justice.
Well, I was once a Chief of Justice. I wasn't a lieutenant colonel. I was an O3. And my ignorance was so profound that, suffice it to say, I wouldn't have done this, but that's neither here nor there. He's an O5. Maybe he's less ignorant than I was. No one could have been more.
Your Honor, we think the...
Is it your position there's no authority for this? Okay.
Absolutely not. And that, I think, is connected with the delay in the effect. In part, you know, we believe this case is the unanswered question from part. What happens if a unit intentionally delays a soldier's pay, much less secretly?
Well, but, I mean, here you don't even have that, do you? The unit didn't delay anything. One person, arguably without authority, persuaded others to delay it.
Regulation that supports what happened in this case. And we think this court should firmly and emphatically reject any attempt by the government to basically create a stasis where nothing happens and then use that as a basis for continuing jurisdiction.
So there's no limbo.
No limbo.
Counsel, on that specific point of no limbo, in this particular case, the appellant was not owed any money. In fact, he owed money, but there are instances, believe it or not, in which an LES is incorrect. Later things are changed on it one way or the other, and I think people can have their own experiences with that. Until the final review by DFAS, how does anybody know that he wasn't owed any money? I mean, it's not uncommon that there would be a change at some point. And I'm just trying to think of, doesn't your rule just also put people in limbo also, which is to say that if the LES shows a negative amount, well, then you're out of the Army. But if it shows a positive amount, you're not out of the Army, assuming we don't overrule Hart. But you would never really know until the final calculations were done.
Your Honor, I think two things, Your Honor. First, I think it's noteworthy the military judge made a finding of fact in this case that the debt existed that month. That's a finding of fact, and that's, I think, supported.
But it's made after the fact. The judge was able to make that finding, but at the time, no one would really know. So you would be in limbo, wouldn't you?
Your Honor, I think that's the crux of this, and having this discussion with this honorable court. I think without overturning Hart, which, again, our position is you need not do, there will be limbo. There will be uncertainty. That's reflected by exactly what happened and didn't happen in this case. And there's no shortage of people. Every prosecutor, commander, soldier, or any support personnel had the type of certainty and finality over appellant status that Nettles talks as the weighty interest of personal jurisdiction. And Chief Judge Stuckey, I see I'm out of time. Pending further questions from the court, I'll
thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Meredith Picard, and along with my co-counsel, Captain Allison Rowley, I represent the United States. This court should affirm the Army Court's opinion and find that the Army had jurisdiction over appellant for two reasons. First, the Army Court properly applied the guidance of 10 U.S.C. 1168 Alpha, as this honorable court has for 30 years, and analogized our instant case to United States v. Hart. And second, examining this case through the prism of stare decisis, there is no basis to turn away from the guidance provided by 10 U.S.C. 1168 Alpha. First,
so are you suggesting that no matter how much confusion and that the government creates around the status of an individual like this, that it all revolves around whether or not his pay was fully accounted for? Is that the government's position?
Now, the government's position is that mistakes were certainly made by appellant's unit. And for those mistakes, appellant was awarded Article 13 credit. Those are unfortunately the same types of mistakes that are made often when an accused is brought back.
But those mistakes, are different than everyone not understanding what the accused status is. In other words, it's not an issue of giving him credit for his pretrial confinement. The issue is, what was the accused status? In this case, it seems that there was enough confusion generated by the government actors. I mean, this is one of these cases where you have too many cooks in the kitchen, I think. And all of that resulted in everyone thinking, the accused and his family, the commanders, other individuals, administrative people, people in the pay department, all of them thinking the accused was not in the military. Only to finally conclude that, ha, his final pay wasn't accounted for. Let's go pick him up and try him for court-martial.
Your Honor, the government agrees.
And the length, did you hear the exchange between Judge Olson and counsel and me and counsel and me earlier about this whole concept, I think, that that deals with unreasonableness and policy. In other words, if even if the requirements of Hart have not been met, if it's beyond reason, contrary to policy, then jurisdiction should not hold.
Your Honor,
you're not suggesting that it's policy to treat people like this, are you?
If I can address your question in two parts.
I know I gave you a lot of questions to answer, so I'm going to shut up and let you answer.
No, that's all right, Your Honor. I'll try to address it in two parts.
All right.
First, the government agrees that certainly in this case, appellant's unit created confusion and were confused themselves. But it's the government's position that this court should not be guided by, nor should it overturn 30 years of case law.
Well, I'm not suggesting that either.
Of members of the unit. The members of the unit who were incorrect in giving improper legal advice, especially those who were not lawyers but members of the junior members of the chain of command, their subjective beliefs about whether appellant was subject to the UCMJ and still in the Army are not in fact law and should not be guidance in this case because that would result in a carved-out exception that would create more uncertainty.
Well, and that includes the Chief of Justice, presumably.
Your Honor, the Chief of Justice did his best to halt the pay and accounting.
But don't you think that in a situation like this where the only reason that the accounting is not completed is because someone intervenes to keep it from being completed without informing the service member or former service member that it's not being completed, that would be an exception?
No, Your Honor, because that was
why?
That was also the case in United States v. Hart. It was actually the legal office who issued a memorandum to halt final
this
processing.
This wasn't a legal office. This was an individual with no authority to do so.
Your Honor, as the Chief of Justice, it is his duty to make sure that the legal office, all investigations and all prosecution of cases, whether they're being handled in the civilian world and that soldier is flagged.
So he testified that they halted the accounting process and never coordinated with the command.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Never coordinated with the command, this legal officer.
Yes, Your Honor. But after that,
We can have a cowboy acting on his own, not coordinating with the command, and that can retain jurisdiction over someone forever?
No, Your Honor, but there are
For how much longer? How much longer could he have waited? How much longer could he have delayed before he went and picked him up?
Well, Your Honor, this soldier was not scheduled to contractually ETS from the Army for two more years. So this is not...
But he had been administratively discharged and given his DD-214, correct?
It had been mailed on the 23rd of April, Your Honor. That's correct. Okay. However, this soldier wasn't actually due to leave the Army for two more years. So this isn't...
But the Army thought he'd left the Army, right? When he came back to base, they didn't even want to feed him.
Well, those who did not know the law, Your Honor, yes. They did not know that he was still in the Army. He had trouble receiving...
The Secretary of the Army has the power to discharge members of the Army. That power is delegated. In this case, it was invoked. I don't get the distinction between, well, he didn't serve out his original enlistment. People are discharged all the time administratively for cause, as was this guy. So what's the distinction? I mean, somehow everyone should have said, oh, well, no, because his real discharge dates 2 years down the road. It doesn't make any difference what is done by the Secretary of the Army's delegate. I mean, what's this? This argument seems ridiculous to me.
Your Honor, it matters because the only reason that this service member was going to leave prior to his expiration of term of service is because the command decided to initiate this chapter process. And even though the Chief of Justice is the individual who ultimately halted that, within the regular processing time of Defense Finance and Accounting Service, which was 45 to 90 days for a service member in civilian confinement, a member of the command, the acting battalion commander, ratified that decision on May 15th.
Okay, now,
2 days
after. Is 1168 a jurisdictional statute?
It is not, Your Honor.
But it's part of the GI Bill, is it not?
It was, Your Honor.
It was part of the 1944 GI Bill, and its purpose was to protect service members from getting from the government welching on their pay. It was not, it's not a jurisdictional hook. It's not part of the Uniform Code. It doesn't reference court-martial jurisdiction. So where do we get this hang jurisdiction on whether the cash has been kicked out? I suppose, Jeff Farrell, you can say you can hang it on us because we produced art. But I want, in a broader sense, and going back to Judge Sparks' concerns, it seems to me that when the, when it quacks like a duck and walks like a duck and it quacks like a discharge and you got a piece of paper that says you're out and the VA send you a whole bunch of stuff and suddenly the MPs show up and hustle you back, I think you got a problem here. So how is the argument really that, yeah, he didn't have any authority, but the Army caught up with it before whatever time DFAS usually takes? In the first place, we don't know how much time DFAS takes. And there's probably infinite variability in that. And you're going to make jurisdiction ride on that?
No, Your Honor.
What does jurisdiction ride on here?
Well, it's been set forth by this court when we read 1168 Alpha in tandem with 1169 and Article 2. It's the best guidance that we have, and it's worked. This is the first case in a decade that's come up on this issue. 99%
No, it's not. We had, I don't know how many cases, when the Army was bringing on significant numbers of reservists, that the left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing, and we had, you know, somebody had to puzzle it out. But go ahead.
Your Honor, this comes up infrequently because this does create certainty. And certainty is not that every service member is discharged in the same amount of days. Certainty is that the same process is followed for every service member across this service.
Well, no, but I think what you're saying is certainty is that every service member is either discharged within a certain number of days or discharged within some vague notion of how long DFAS takes, which isn't set down anywhere.
Well, it is, Your Honor, and the testimony that we have in this record is the same testimony that was given 10 years ago in the Hart case. The same six steps were identified by DFAS.
Can I ask you about that? Because suppose we were going to agree with you and we were to write the opinion saying this falls after Hart. In Hart, toward the end of the opinion, the court said, the statute says no soldier can be discharged until they've received... until a final pay or a substantial part of it is ready to be delivered. And the court said that until DFAS followed each of those steps, nobody was authorized to deliver any pay. And that was the logic, which was that he had pay coming, but until DFAS completed the administrative steps, nobody in the Army was authorized to deliver that pay. And so the court concluded that neither his pay nor his final pay was ready for delivery. And my question is, if that's the crux of Hart, how do we write an opinion that says, that uses that same reasoning in a case where there is no pay? What would you say on the specific reasoning that the pay was not ready for delivery when there was no pay?
Your Honor, the court can apply the same reasoning in Hart because, as this court stated in Hart, final computation of pay is not simply a final paycheck. It's opening a soldier's NT line.
That no, I agree. I agree with all that, but the reasoning was
opening his what?
The NT line, Your Honor, is.
I don't know what that is.
And that's why that's so important in this case. Finance. I'm sorry.
Wow.
The NT line is what tells finance every single entitlement that a service member has, and not just their positive entitlements, but also garnishments things that are to be coming out of that paycheck.
Okay, so it's a statement of the individual pay status of each soldier.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank
and that
you.
Was not done in this case. So just like it happened in Hart, there was an initial snapshot, and the soldier's representative, an NCO, was told, you probably, this person will owe a debt and not be owed a final paycheck. But as this court said in Hart, final pay is critical calculations, reconciliations, and authorizations pursuant to DFAS regulations. It's an accruing of the final days of leave that a service member has left and whether they're owed money for those days of leave. If Defense Finance and Accounting is incorrect, they can actually withdraw that money later if a service member is overpaid. So it's an important process, not just a paycheck. Every service member should be put on notice before they're discharged of exactly which entity, whether it's the service or the service member.
It's all the jurisdiction. I mean, let's say I'm a partner at a law firm, right, and I get my quote-unquote final pay and accounting from my law firm, right, and I think I've separated from my law firm. And then 3 months later, they get sued for some horrible malpractice thing. I think I'm gone. I am gone, but it turns out they owe me another $55,000. Do you think that I'm still part of that lawsuit because they still owe me money? Do you think I'm still part of the law firm?
Your Honor.
I mean, it's a different question, but I mean, it's the logic holds. Like, I think I'm gone. They think I'm gone.
And, Your Honor, it may very well be in that case that you could be brought back to that law firm, but we don't think that that's an analogous
well,
hypothetical
situation. I'm pretty
sure,
no, I couldn't be brought back to the law firm because I'm separated. The fact that they still owe me money doesn't change my separation date.
Your Honor, there are an infinite variety of rules that could be created to determine.
Well, and counsel, that's one of the points. There are an infinite variety of rules because there's an infinite variety of soldiers. And making this jurisdictional hook hang on how long it takes DFAS to do something, which is infinite in its variability, totally undercuts the interest we've proclaimed in the certainty of knowing your status. I just don't get it.
I mean, we have, no offense, but we have, like, senior judges on this court that they still haven't figured
out. Haven't been paid in years.
Your Honor, for that reason, the service
member... Do you think that they're still on active members of the court?
Your Honor, active duty service members, when they leave the service, should know whether the government may come after them for wages owed. They should know.
They should know. Are they informed of that?
They receive final pay and accounting, Your Honor.
But are they told at any point? Are they told at any point that until their final pay and accounting is taken care of, they're still subject to court martial?
No, Your Honor. Service.
And you were referring earlier to the subjective belief of a number of people. I believe it was the chief judge was going through, who believed that the appellant was out of the military. But weren't those subjective beliefs objectively reasonable? You've got an individual who not only received the DD Form 214, they were cleared from the facility by his the E5, Sergeant Davenport, who was responsible for that. Sergeant Davenport said to him, you're out of the Army. Good luck to you. Give me your ID card. Then the appellant is paying for his own medical. He is off doing everything, and no one is telling him at any point that he is still subject to court-martial. Why should we countenance that?
In fact, they're telling him just the opposite. You're done. You're free, man.
Yeah, he's getting all kinds of mail from the VA saying, hey, vet.
He can't get his health care paid for because he's a civilian. That's what he's been told.
And, Your Honor, those mistakes that were made certainly amount to illegal pretrial punishment, and he was awarded Article 13 credit for
that. But how can you give credit when it comes down to an issue of not having jurisdiction? The appropriate remedy for not having jurisdiction is to recognize that there was no jurisdiction and having no criminal process occurring.
Your Honor, the Army still had jurisdiction, and no matter how many people in the unit were incorrect.
Now, it's not a situation where he was somehow beyond the reach of the law. He was subject to prosecution by state authorities, correct?
And when the Army realized that is not the direction the state authorities were taking, because all of the witnesses were deployed, including the victim in this case, the Army decided to terminate the early termination that it began. But appellant was never entitled to be early terminated prior to his expiration of term of service. So this isn't...
It's not a question of whether he had the right. It's the question that the Chief Judge was talking about, that that's what the Army did. The Army separated him.
Well, they began to, Your Honor, but they didn't complete the process. And as this court has held in the past, final pay and accounting is an important process. And regardless of whether that amounts to a final paycheck or an amount that the soldier is told, you owe this amount to the United States.
Captain Picard, what about, I seem to be the only one worried about this, but, you know, the language in Nettles that says, hey, look, 1168 is the rule, and most times we're going to abide by it, but we're not going to be bound by it. And we're not going to be bound by it when doing so would be against reason or policy. So help me out with this language. That sounds like an exception. It sounds like the court is making way for a case, some would argue, like this one, where the process was so beyond reason and so beyond policy that jurisdiction cannot be found. Can you help me out with the language in Nettles?
Your Honor,
and why this case doesn't fit into that category?
First, the Nettles case, the exception that was carved out there, was extremely narrow.
Well, I agree, it is narrow.
And it was an exception that made sense because the statute was never meant to apply to reservists.
I understand that. That was reservists. So.
In this case, this is the best law that we have right now, the best jurisprudence as guidance for when a service member is discharged and when they're no longer subject to UCMJ action. And that has been relied upon. It was relied upon by the Chief of Justice, it was relied upon by the command, it was relied upon by the Army Court, it's even been relied upon by circuit courts. The Sixth Circuit in United States versus Green had to address this issue about whether a service member was still subject to the military extraterritorial.
Right, just make sure, I know you don't have much time left, I just want to make sure your position with regard to the language in Nettles is that Nettles is limited to the facts of that case where a reservist was involved. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
And that's not to say that this court may decline to apply the guidance of 10 U.S.C. 1168 Alpha in other cases, but this is not that case. This is a case where, despite all of the follies and the confusion created by the command and by the justice shop, this soldier's computation of final pay and accounting was never calculated.
Because the justice shop told them not to do it.
And despite that, Your Honor, that was ratified by a commander who did have authority to make that determination.
About a month later.
22 days later, Your Honor, on May 15th.
It shouldn't matter to us at all that that determination was made only after they concluded that, in fact, the civilians weren't going to prosecute him because of the difficulties inherent in this case.
No, Your Honor, because that legal shop was giving advice to the command to make the best decision that it could. And when done properly, when given the full aerial view of what was going to happen, that this person would escape prosecution for a soldier-on-soldier sexual offense, the Army decided that it was not going to complete the final separation early of that soldier, but that the Army was going to make sure that he was prosecuted for that offense. And given the legal advice that was provided, that command made that decision that ratified what the Chief of Justice did. So despite his unilateral action, that still happened within the normal processing time of defense, finance, and accounting.
Would it have made any difference if it didn't?
Your Honor, I think that if an individual acted unilaterally and the command had never stepped in to make a determination, that might make a difference. But that's not what occurred here. The command redeployed from theater, and when they returned and actually became aware of what had happened in the case of PSC Christensen, the command realized he was going to completely escape prosecution for sexually assaulting another soldier who was also deployed. And the command decided that it was not in the Army's best interest that that happen. So the Army decided to stop the processing of his final pay and accounting because the Army relied on this court's prior jurisprudence as well. The commander on May 15th, within the normal processing, even if the Chief of Justice had never been involved, made the decision that that should be halted and that his order should be revoked. And when that occurred, that was still within the processing time that would be true for any service member in the same situation as the appellant. So while it's longer.
You're well over your time, counsel.
Yeah.
Apologies, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Does the appellant have rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
In the oral argument in Hart, the government counsel made this court a promise of 20 days. The very last thing he said to this honorable court in the argument is, 20 days is not a bright line, but it's a line. And he wholeheartedly agreed. That was the quote, I wholeheartedly agree, when he was asked whether going beyond 20 days would make the case significantly different. The certainty and finality that was proffered and promised by the government in its argument in Hart has dissipated in line with their argument today. There is no certainty and no finality with what the government proposes. The Army regulations do propose certainty of 2,400 on the date of discharge. Ms. Wright says that's what they tell soldiers who leave Fort Stewart. We tell them you are out at 2,400. The DFAS regulations say that a payment is made on the date of separation. And then it says there's 20 days. Yes, Your Honor.
Do you agree with the government's position on with regard to the language in Nettles about not being bound, this court not being bound by 1168 if to do so would go against reason or policy? Do you agree with the government that that case and that language is limited to the facts in Nettles alone because he was a reservist?
Absolutely not.
Do you have a view on that?
The weighty, what this court said is these interests of certainty and or weighty interests, certainty and finality. And that really is the crux of personal jurisdiction. And to the extent the government promised it in Hart, it's gone. There is no certainty and there is no finality with the position they have put forth today. And it runs in contradiction of Army regulations promulgated by the service secretary.
Counsel, if we were to adopt the position of the dissent in Hart that the DD-214 is the determining factor, under Army regulations, the DD-214 can be revoked if it was issued because of fraud or other reasons that are listed in the regulation. Given the fact that the DD-214 can be revoked, doesn't that undercut that as a certainty? I mean, we're never really going to get certainty in this case.
Your Honor, well, I would point to Army Regulation 600-8-5, which says when there's no evidence of fraud or obvious error and the soldier received actual or constructive delivery, orders discharging a soldier from the service will not be revoked unless the revocation is a written confirmation of verbal orders issued before the effective date of discharge. None of that happened here. This was a valid, issued, completed, finalized discharge. Christopher Christensen was out of the Army. He was not a soldier. And he wasn't a soldier when they went and got him. He wasn't a soldier at the time of trial. Ultimately, this court should find what the unit itself wrote, or a member, the brigade judge advocate wrote in September 2013, the case law is not good for us. The Army did not have jurisdiction over Christopher Christensen. Pending any further questions from the court.
Thank you, counsel. Court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted. And the court will stand in recess pending further order of the court. And I would remind my colleagues that we're going to take a picture after the place clears.
All rise.
Sorry for interrupting.
Box.
I'm sorry for
no, that's okay.
Are we doing it here?
Doing it here?
Yeah.
After you walk here.
We're staying.
The court is adjourned until further order of the court.
Are we doing it here?
Yeah.